Hey there. I'm so excited to introduce you to Sabrina Moyle. I'm sharing in this episode a conversation that she and I had about having that conscious mind allows you to have a creative mind. And she's, you know, everything I think of when I think of creative. She's a author. She's a songwriter. She sings in a band. She's a creative writer. She owns a business that with her sister, where they create these witty, brilliant books that have such a beautiful meaning behind them. And she's a mom who makes incredible Halloween costumes for her kids. So she was such a delight to talk to, and I'm so excited to share this with you. And what else can I tell you about her? Let me see. She's so relatable. She weaves humor and wit into her life, and yet also is such a kindred spirit because she is seeking a deeper meaning and seeking to live more consciously and intentionally. And so I'm so excited to share her with you. And so come join us as we talk about a creative mind being a conscious mind and a conscious mind being a creative mind. So have fun. I'm so excited that we've been talking about hitting record for a long time in our weekly conversations. I'm not weekly, I guess bi-weekly. And they're so rich. And I keep thinking, and I've kept saying that we need to bring this forward and share it with others. So I'm so glad you've agreed to open up. And I thought we could focus this conversation entirely on you. I know normally we volley back and forth and talk about how a conscious mind is a creative mind. And I think it's so divinely timed that you just came out of a creative flow to have this conversation. So thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to talk about it. And yeah, I feel like our conversations are actually one example of a practice for staying in creative flow. Having, I won't call it an accountability partner, but thought partners who can hold space for you to be able to share where you are in your creative process and on your life journey, which is ultimately a creative process. So thank you. I feel like our biweekly conversations are definitely a piece of what I would love to talk about in terms of talking about how a conscious mind is a creative mind.
Yeah. Yes, I do really value the conversations, and I've realized how I want to encapsulate that and make it repeatable with, you know, other amazing beings like you. And speaking of amazing, so I just am always in awe of how your creativity spills forward as an illustrator, as a musician, as a parent that involves all sorts of creativity, but also how that comes through in life, whether it's as, you know, with your spouse, as a daughter, as a, you know, a sister. It just comes through in so many ways. So I have to ask, are you someone that always identified as being creative, or like, when did you first sort of associate yourself as being creative?
I think I always identified myself as being creative. I think all children are creative. So my sister and I, she and I collaborate on books. I actually write the words and she illustrates, but I often will sort of sketch out, you know, sort of concepts and stuff for illustrations and that sort of thing. But she is actually a very, very skilled illustrator. So I think from a young age, we just played creatively together a lot. We made clothes for dolls and that sort of thing. So I feel like I always thought of myself as being creative. And I was fortunate to grow up in a family where my mother was very creative and did a lot of sewing and, you know, just kind of quilting and crafting and was extremely resourceful. And my dad was a musician, sort of amateur musician, but also dabbled in things like, you know, stained glass or linoleum block printing and stuff. So creativity was always around as I was growing up. So I think I always thought of myself as a creative person and then just kind of parlayed that into a career in my 20s, I would say, and really started to embrace being a creative business owner. I own Hello Lucky, which is a, you know, a brand that started out doing letterpress greeting cards. And now we are a design studio and we design all kinds of things, but particularly children's books. and now puzzles and games and stuff. So anyway, so I parlayed it into something creative when I was in my 20s, and it took a while. I'm now in my late 40s for me to really hone in on the creative process and really kind of tune into my own creative voice. And as you mentioned, now that's kind of blossoming in other areas, like being a parent, a spouse. I'm in a band and, sing and write music. So it's been a fun process. But yeah, I did always think of myself as such, but I applied creativity so broadly and so productively until later in my life.
I'm so fascinated. Being a Virgo and very like follow and very rule obliging and following the rules and, working within the confines of growing up, I've always just marveled over people that were creative. And so I'm wondering, how do you protect that creativity as a kid growing up when you have to navigate the confines of a school setting and the structure that has, and needing to, follow the rules and move forward that way. How do you still nurture and protect that creativity?
Right. Well, I think, I do consider myself to be an artist. So to be an artist, you have to be able to tap into creative flow, but you also have to have the structure and discipline to actually produce. For me, the state of creating is a state of being in connection with source and allowing inspiration to come through. And ideally, a creative flow is almost automatic. It's effortless because you're just allowing things to flow. But then you have to take that creative idea, let's say it's a first draft of a song or a first draft of a manuscript or whatever, just maybe even just your journaling, and you have a few ideas. You have to then take that into something that can be packaged, that could be polished, that could be refined, that could then be brought to market and possibly sold. Or if it's a song for my band, something that I can communicate to everybody else about, and we have to have disciplined rehearsals to actually make it something that's worth listening to, right? So I think that creativity and the sort of more structure of formal schooling, for example, do go hand in hand because you need both. You need the pragmatism as well as the creative inspiration and the creative process. So, and the other way I think about it is, when I was growing up, I did a lot of arts, right? So I did music, I did drama. So anything that is kind of more open-ended, visual arts, I loved all of that stuff. And when I think about raising my own kids and wanting them to stay in touch with their creativity, I definitely kind of encourage them to do the arts and get involved with the arts. But also, they're fortunate to be at a school that is pretty project-based. So there's a lot of opportunities for creative presentations and projects that I think help them stay in tune with their creative voice. Because I think, you sort of alluded to this, oftentimes that creative impulse and that freedom that we have as children, depending on our personality, can kind of get stamped out, and then we find ourselves as adults being like, well, am I creative and how can I be creative and not knowing where to begin, and there's a lot of insecurity and baggage that can come along with that. So, I do agree, like the ideal, if you're a parent with children, is to try to keep them connected to that as much as possible so they don't lose it and then have to rediscover it later in life.
Yeah, I just can completely relate first of bridging the two of having the creativity and using systems and structures to bring that creativity forward in different ways. And I also relate to just kids being natural creatives. And then listening to you and the things that you did, I'm like, oh, perhaps I was more creative, but I didn't associate as being creative. And so I wonder too, it gets me thinking that at what I think for myself, at what point did I maybe, because I probably didn't even know what creative was, I just did it as a child. But at a certain point, I almost disassociated with that, even though I kind of did that. And I wonder if that was, just, I'm sure it happened unconsciously. But I just wonder if you see that as raising your kids, and if there's a point where you've noticed, or perhaps as you were growing up, where you started to feel like you might drift and you were like, oh no, or maybe not.
Yeah, when I was a kid, even though I was creative, I actually didn't consider myself creative. Like there were these moments. I was, in retrospect, I can see that I was, but in the moment, I did not think of myself as creative because I was told that I'm not an artist. So my sister, from the time she was two, was drawing on milk boxes. I mean, she clearly had this very natural gift for visual art, right? And so I actually grew up being told that I was not an artist. And even though I did drama and music and stuff like that, it was never, I never thought of myself as being someone who could make a career out of being creative. So I actually went down this whole path of liberal arts school and then business school and arts administration and worked as a nonprofit consultant, et cetera, before I circled back to joining my sister who had started this greeting card company and seeing that she needed support as an artist who didn't really have business skills to really get a creative business off the ground. So kind of, I came full circle. And I think that probably happens to a lot of people. I think the key moment as a child when you stop thinking yourself as creative is when you start comparing yourself to people who are obviously creative in some way, just obviously. Like my sister just had such an obvious gift with visual art. And that makes us say, oh, well, I can't do that, or that's not me, you know? And so I better take some other less creative, more traditional sort of path for myself. But A, what we don't realize is that creativity spans so many different mediums. I mean, there's creativity in business, there's creativity no matter where you look, in science, right? So that's a fallacy to kind of look at someone who is an artist, say in the visual arts, and be like, oh, well, they're obviously really good and I'm not, so therefore I'm not creative at all. Like, that's just complete bunk, right? But I think a lot of us make that leap. And then often we're told, because I think there's a lot of anxiety in our culture around creativity, particularly around the arts, and whether, you know, this is what gets cut from school funding and stuff. It's like, you know, a lot of parents have a lot of anxiety about their kids being successful and being able to survive. And that survival instinct kicks in and they discourage their kids from doing things that seem frivolous, such as the arts, you know? So I think we get that programming from society as well, which in turn causes us to disassociate with our true voice, our intuition, our creativity, our ability to think outside the box, our ability to imagine and innovate, you know? So I think it's something I certainly experienced, and I think a lot of people do experience. And for me, the way I got out of it was I glommed onto my sister, you know, like, who was still struggling as an artist, but clearly, you know, had this artistic gift. And I just kind of was ancillary to her, where I started creating concepts for greeting cards and kind of art directing her a little bit. And slowly, over about 20 years, I started to gain the confidence in my own creative voice, you know, and now I'm very confident in it. And I totally have a great creative practice, you know, but it took a long time. So I think that it's a long-winded answer to your question, but I think it's very common for kids to self-judge or self-compare or be hear from authority figures that they should not pursue something, you know. And the reality is, the thing that I coach my kids on is like, don't compare yourself to other people, because there's always going to be somebody better than you, right? Always compare yourself to yourself. So if you have a gift and an inclination for, you know, say playing the guitar, it does help if you have a little bit of a natural talent, you know, and you can dabble. And if you don't, you can switch to a different instrument. But like, you know, if you have an inclination for something creative, you just need to kind of stick with it until it feels more natural and you gain confidence, and then just keep comparing yourself to yourself, you know, as you continue to follow that. Because again, there's always going to be somebody better than you, and it's not a zero-sum game. You know, everybody's creative voice is unique and different. The way I play the guitar is different from the way you play the guitar. So it's just pointless to compare yourself on some level. You know, that said, at some point, if you want to make a career out of being creative, you have to be good enough to be able to warrant, you know, sort of standing out in some way or being remarkable in some way that you can actually charge for your services. So there isn't some sort of an inflection point later on. But early on for kids, when they're developing their creativity, it's really just about, don't compare yourself to other people. If you're enjoying it and you're making progress, stick with it. If you're not, switch to something else, but always be doing something creative.
Right. Yeah. It's so, I feel like a child again, sitting here listening to you, that I'm like, that's right. You know, I don't need to compare myself to others. And the way that I create is unique to me. And that is a gift that I'm bringing forward. And I imagine too, you know, you mentioned that there's a point where you need to bring it forward in a way that's, you know, if you're in it for the business aspect of it, and it needs to materialize. I imagine, you know, you've got to sort of, you've stopped comparing, but now you realize you are your own competitor, you know, like the older you, and like, how do you weave in a conscious mind to access your cleanest, purest creativity?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly, you generally just don't want to compare even to your own past work, right? For a lot of creative people, it can become paralyzing to be like, oh, I had this one success and how am I going to replicate that? You know, those types of fears can come in. So yeah, I agree. Like, it is really just about staying present and following your current passion or the current thread and really just finding the joy in that and doing it for yourself. You know, like, you're really, when you're creating for yourself to explore an idea for yourself. And if you love it, then other people will love it generally. Although, you know, obviously you always have to check and see what the market says, but you know, when you're in the throes of the creative process, it's really just about exploring an idea that you're really personally interested in. Like, and if you're passionate about it, it'll show through in the final product.
Yeah. So when you, I imagine, because every artist I know or every creative I know encounters a creative block. Mm-hmm. And like, what are ways that you go about overcoming that? Whether that's a story you can share that sort of illustrates how you've done it, or just your go-to habits that you have, your tendencies that really help you slip into that flow state, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing is really just to walk away and come back to it. And ideally, if I have the luxury of time, which I usually do, I can do that and just walk away, go for a walk, go for a run or, you know, swim or something, and then just come back to it fresh. That tends to be my go-to method. And also just to meditation also is a go-to sort of, what you need to do in those situations is clear your mind. You need to totally become clear and connected to source again, because the reason, and speaking just from my own experience, the reason I get a creative block is because I have anxiety or fear about performance, right? It's a form of performance anxiety. And so typically I need to unpack and ask myself, well, what's underneath that anxiety? What am I afraid of? You know, and what is it that, yeah, what's blocking me and how can I look into that? And see where the origins are, because often those origins come from, you know, childhood, like a need for validation or need for affirmation, you know. And I've recently experienced that with working. I've started, you know, doing projects that are not just for myself, but that are for, you know, big brands, corporate brands, you know, sort of, we're working on a project, and I won't name names, but like that is involving some IP that's very well known. And it's not purely up to me. So this is where I think writer's block for me, or creative block, is more likely to come when it's a collaborative process and there's other creatives in the room and there are other constraints. And there's possibly pressure around, say, a big corporation that has status and power. And, you know, yeah, there's kind of some excitement about the prestige of being associated with that, you know, so there, the ego gets a little bit attached to that. And so all of those things get in the way of truly being the creative flow and bringing forth my own best work, you know? So when that happens, I have to kind of step away, but also then just look under those things and realize, like, ultimately, if I'm going to put creative work out there and if it's going to be worthy and remarkable and really good, and like, you don't want to put any creative work out there unless you really feel great about it being there for a lifetime, you know? So if I'm going to put creative work out there, it has to be my best work and I have to feel good about it and proud of it. And I can't sell out and do it simply for, you know, the paycheck or simply for the status that might come with being affiliated with a major brand. So often for me with creative block, I have to get my priorities straight again, clear things out that are any ego attachments, and realize, you know what? If this is not flowing creatively and it's not aligned with my vision, I'm willing to walk away. And that's always got to be an option with a project, because it may be that you're blocked because it's not the right project for you to be doing. And I'm always aware of that as a possible kind of end game or solution to something if I'm really feeling stuck. So it's really, yeah, I mean, exploring all the underlying, you know, sort of subconscious factors that might be causing a blockage between you and source is kind of where it's at in terms of unpacking and kind of getting back in flow.
That is so, there's so much there. I'm just sitting with that. And I find that that relates to so many areas of our life, you know, and when I go back to marrying that wisdom of being able to create some clarity and just clear out whatever is in the way for you to access source and be able to come through in a way that aligns with what you know to be true, with the fact that creativity appears in all different shapes and forms in our lives. And so when you bring those together, that whether that's parenting in a way that feels in alignment with the way you want to raise your kids and you want, you know, to pursue their dreams and aspirations or the dreams or aspirations you have for them, you want it to be clean. You want to be clear about it. And sometimes you have to walk away and get a change of scenery or some fresh air to then come back and parent creatively. Or even, you know, in a business setting, I see that coming up where you're expected to creatively solve a problem to meet, you know, a certain need. And there could be that resistance there that comes up for you. And, you know, that's a little trickier because it's a little more layered. It's, you know, not as always, it's not as easy to walk away. But walking away could be giving you that clarity to come back in a more intentional, meaningful way.
Right, right. And there's a big difference between creative work and client work. You know, if you're an employee in a business or you're working for a business client, that's client work. And there's only so much of your own creativity that you can bring to that because ultimately the needs of the client come first, right? Whereas true creative work, you are making largely on your own terms. I mean, there's always going to be parameters, but your own vision and voice comes first as opposed to the client's. So, you know, yeah, if you find yourself in a client work situation, you just have to, you know, compromise and give yourself some grace around the fact that yes, you know, you can be creative, but you also have to deal with other, you know, sort of priorities. And the amount to which you can exercise your creativity might be limited, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. So true. So if you were to, you know, offer the younger you one word of wisdom or one piece of advice, what would that whisper be?
I would say you are creative first and foremost, and that it's important to identify yourself as a creative person, you know, and don't let anybody tell you that you're not. So that would be the first thing I would say to my former self. What I say to my kids in present time, because it's so different now for kids, is be a creator, not a consumer. Mm-hmm. And if you're consuming, consume to create, right? When I was growing up, there was no, you know, video games and distractions and YouTube and all this other stuff. So, you know, on the one hand, that was freeing creatively because there weren't all these distractions. But on the other hand, it was limiting creatively because things like Pinterest or Instagram or, you know, there's so much stimulus that you can gather and learn from and use to develop your own creative voice now that we didn't have access to when I was a kid. Right. But that it's double-edged in that consumption can also take you away from your creative voice because you're just then passively consuming and maybe you're getting addicted and whatever, and you're not using it in service of your own creativity. So, you know, consumption's important as long as it's in service of learning, developing your own creative voice, looking at different styles, gaining inspiration in terms of how other people do things without getting yourself down with, you know, FOMO or comparison. But just we do have an incredible amount of resources now to be able to foster our own creativity, as long as we keep it in perspective that the end goal is to create, not to consume.
I love that. And I love you, Sabrina. This is just so good. Thank you for bringing this conversation forward in a way where we can share the wisdoms that are usually shared just between the two of us with many. So thank you. Thank you, friend.
Yes, thank you. I love the conversation and always, always a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, I love that conversation. And to really come full circle and wrap this up, the four key takeaways that I got from this is, one, creating is a state of consciousness. And when you have that connection, you're truly a channel to source. So we really touched on that being a huge takeaway. The second one is, when you start comparing yourself, it's your absolute certainty to squash any creativity. So be aware of that when you think of yourself as a creative, or you're doing something creative and you find yourself looking at someone else's to nixay that. And the third essential takeaway is, we touched on several ways to connect with your consciousness when you're hitting a creative block. We touched on some practical things and then more deeply rooted things to help you kind of connect in your inner world by looking beneath the block that you're faced. And then the fourth thing, which I just love and it has been imprinted in my soul, was when Sabrina had shared that to be a creator, not a consumer. And when you are a consumer, then consume to create. And meaning create your own voice, or create your own writing, or create your own solution to something. And so I just love that. And I hope you loved all of that conversation, including the four essential takeaways I noted. And I welcome you to our next episode. Bye for now.